Hello, everyone. I gather lots of our colleagues have joined us from all over the world. Welcome to this World Health Organization teleclass as part of a larger series on patient safety. Clean care is safer care. You may have attended several of these already and will be quite familiar with the format. By way of introduction, I'm Shaheen Mehta. I chair the Infection Control Africa Network and work at the Unit for Infection Control at Stellenbosch University's Faculty of Medicine and Health Sciences. Today, it is my great pleasure to host this WHO, World Health Organization, teleclass on a very, very important topic, particularly for low to middle-income countries. It is on risk assessment and priority setting. We are all aware of the immense importance of risk assessment in low to middle-income countries where resources are limited and the need in health, is especially in infection control, is enormous. A certain regulation is required in this regard. It is my great pleasure to introduce today's speaker, a veteran and a champion of infection prevention and control in low to middle-income countries. Nizam Damani is Associate Medical Director of Infection Prevention and Control and a Senior Lecturer in Medical Microbiology at Queen's University, Belfast, UK. He is a member of the Education Committee of the Healthcare Infection Society and is also on the Program and Examinations Committee of the Diploma and Masters in Infection Prevention and Control in the UK. Dr. Damani serves on the advisory panel of the European Union's Implement Project on Healthcare-Associated Infections. In the WHO, he is prominent as a member of the core group of the first Global Patient Safety Challenge and was the country coordinator for the pilot site in Pakistan for the implementation of the WHO hand hygiene guidelines. He was a member of the Working Party on Injection Safety and Related Infection Control. This is a subgroup of the WHO Safe Injection Global Network, also known as SIGN. He is a founding member of the Infection Control Society of Pakistan. Dr. Damani has served as a treasurer for the International Federation of Infection Control, known as IFIC, and now is chair of the IFIC Membership Subcommittee. His long list of publications, which are included in peer-reviewed journals, are too many to mention at the moment, but he has published books as well, one which is known as Information Resources in Infection Control and the Manual of Infection Prevention and Control. These have been translated into Polish, Croatian, and Japanese. It is my great pleasure to present Dr. Nizam Damani to you, whose lecture today will be on risk assessment and priority settings in low to middle-income countries. Nizam?
Okay. Shaheen, thank you very much indeed, you know, for such a kind introduction. And thank you very much for joining the teleconference. And as Paul said, it's good afternoon or good morning, at least in UK, it's good afternoon. So the topic of the presentation is the risk assessment and priority setting in infection control in low and middle country. Next slide, please. So what I'm going to do, that this is the outline of my presentation. So after setting the scene, I will outline how to apply the concept of risk assessment in IPC with aim to either eliminate or minimize hazard and reduce HCAI, especially in low and middle country. But this approach can be applied to high resource country, because no matter where you live, the resources are always limited. Next slide, please. According to WHO, it has been estimated that between 5 to 15% of hospitalized patients in general ward and as many as 50% patient or more intensive care unit in resource-rich country acquire HTAI. Magnitude of the problem in low to middle income countries is not really known, is because of lack of good quality surveillance data. Next slide, please. So these are the couple of definitions I think is very important to understand. First is a risk assessment is a systematic process for assessing and integrating professional judgments about probable adverse conditions and events. And risk management is the identification assessment and prioritization of a risk followed by coordinated and economical application of resources, and this is quite important, to minimize, monitor, and control the probability and the impact of adverse infection and events. Now, it is important to understand that an IPCDS approach can be used not only for hazard or risk that arise from the environment or items or equipment, but also to risk related to the patient, staff, visitor, but most important, the community at large. Next slide, please. So let's have a look at some of the key definition which we used in risk assessment process, and that this is quite important. So first of all, what is hazard? Hazard is defined as something with potential to cause harm, and in IPC it is mainly microorganism, which either are multi-resistant or the microorganism which are highly infectious, which can cause either infectious diseases or possibly communicable diseases. But also it could be chemical disinfectant, which are used to decontaminate or clean environment, items, and equipment. And a risk is defined as the likelihood of harm resulting from these hazards. And what I have done over here, and you can read it from the slide, that I've given you just only four examples. Say, for example, healthcare worker can acquire blood-borne viral infection due to exposure of contaminated sharpener, which is quite common worldwide. Exposure to chemical disinfectant, and a classical example over here would be glutaldehyde in poorly ventilated area. Risk of cross-infection to healthcare worker, visitor, and other patient, not only due to failure to isolate patient, but also failure to comply with the basic good infection control practices. And of course, reuse of item and equipment without adequate decontamination. Next slide. Now, this is the risk factor. So if you look at risk factor, you can work out your formula. You've got probability, which is also frequency, multiplied with impact and severity. Now, if you look at the first one, which is about the frequency and probability, this can be achieved either through the local and or national surveillance data on the incidence of HCI. Will give you probability of frequency. But also you can scan through your adverse incident report and audit of IPC practices. And that will actually give you information on the frequency of failure and the problem or the procedure which are not followed as per recommendation. Or you've got certain infections which are quite high. So these are the area you look into. So that will give you some kind of probability factor on that one, or the frequency of the problem. Second bit of risk assessment will give you the information on the severity of the disease to the individual patient, and these are the bits which I'm going to talk in a minute, which could be to healthcare worker, it could be to the patient, it could be to the visitor, but could be in the community when the patient discharged from the hospital. Next slide, please. Now, there are four key stages of risk assessment. The first one is to identify risk and hazard. The second thing is to assess who can be harmed. And the third important factor is to quantify the risk by getting that information which we talked earlier on. Once you have that information, then I think we go to the next step, which is the most important step, which is of the analysis of the risk. And this could be, you can measure the potential impact, you can record the finding, and then you develop what we describe as a risk assessment matrix. And I'm going to tell you in a minute how we can do that. Next slide, please. So if you look at risk analysis, the most important question we have to ask is, and this is quite crucial, why these infections are happening in the first place. And they can be divided into two bits. The source of performance deficit, which could be either due to an act of omission or act of commission. For example, the act of omission can occur due to failure to comply with the lack of knowledge, lack of communication, inadequate provision of education, training, and supervision, lack of availability of regular supply of goods like hand hygiene product, PPE, and which is quite common in developing countries. So I think it's very important for IPC to understand these concepts and why people are not doing things. The second issue is about what we call Act of Commission. This is an act which should not have taken place or committed. And this could be because of lack of commitment and lack of consideration for the other. And this is quite difficult, I think, and this is much more complex because this may require reinforcement from the management perspective, and these are quite difficult to deal with. So I think what I'm trying to say over here is that when you are doing your risk analysis, just try to actually get at the bottom of the issue, what are the real issue around here, and especially with the Act of Commission, you may have to take into consideration to discuss the senior management, and this is the area which is quite important, the senior management backup to IPC team is absolutely critical to understand all this issue for any successful program. Next slide. So the second thing is that why they are happening. So sometimes what happens, you know, we apply solution to different problems in different ways. So say, for example, when you fail to understand what is the true nature of the problem, so real solutions are adopted to deal with the wrong problem rather than incorrect solution to the real problem. This can be often due to lack of communication or misinterpretation of the information which are published in the literature. And once we actually do that, then we have to put forward agreed evidence-based risk reduction plan in place. Next slide, please. Now, I'm sure you've seen this slide on so many times. This is what we call James Reason slides of Swiss cheese model. James Reason has developed the Swiss cheese model of error and causation, and this can be applied to IPC. James Reason hypothesized that most accidents can occur or trace back to one or more of the four levels of failure. From IPC perspective, it could be due to organizational culture, which is not supportive to IPC team. Secondly, it could be technical, where there are design flaws in the system and processes, and there are too many examples in the, if you look at the literature in infection control, there are too many examples, especially, for example, endoscope reprocessing. The third factor is the failure to work in a team, which may be due to lack of communication, inadequate knowledge and understanding and training, and application of integrated practice to get the best result outcome for the patient. And the last defense are the individual who are working in the organization who either lack motivation and the leaders do not provide effective leadership and value the importance of IPC in the team and the program. So in this model, an organization defenses against prevention of adverse event or infection can occur if there is a failure which can pass through all the four barriers. And you can see it is indicated by the arrow which is going through all the four holes of this cheese. That means all the barriers have been broken which leads to adverse incident. Next slide, please. Now over here, I'll just give you an example of this assessment of hostel-based program which have been taken from the reference which have been highlighted at the base of the book. So what happened in this particular matrix, the severity of the infection is actually based on the size of the population risk, vulnerability of the patient, likelihood of that program is prepared to manage the problem. So by using this template, you can assess the severity of risk by multiplying various factors. And you can develop this matrix for your own organization, but this is just an example that how we can develop this matrix and put some kind of weighting behind it to set priorities. Next slide. This is what we call a risk matrix. This slide shows you that on one side you have got the probability of frequency of infection, which can vary from almost very rare to almost certain. On the other side, you actually feel that the impact can be very insignificant or can be catastrophic, which can lead to death as well. Now, once you start putting those things together in this type of format, this will allow you to set priority and target resources on the extreme or the risk where is the greatest. Now, if you keep on working this model, eventually it will come to a point when you target all the resources, the extreme will actually go out of this circuit altogether once you start applying this model. But this will actually give you some kind of example, an idea how to develop risk matrix and to actually prioritize. Next slide, please. This is another example to show you how to develop a very simple risk matrix. And one column highlight using 2x2 table, one column highlight is severity, another column highlight the frequency. This is quite a simple matrix. And what happened in this particular one, that you can actually have high severity, high frequency, will be your first target. Now, this can be tailor-made to your local facilities. And this is just an example. So, say, for example, if you look at the blood-borne viral infection, which are quite common because of reuse of needles and syringes, especially in developing countries, this will be quite useful to target those in the first area. So you start high severity, high frequency, and then you talk of sort of high severity, low frequency, like bloodstream infection with second, and the third will be low severity, high frequency, and low severity, low frequency, in that order. Next slide. Now, this slide summarizes that it is essential that when we have to take into consideration not only the severity and the frequency, which we have discussed earlier, but also the cost implication of our recommendation, because health service worldwide do not have bottomless pit. And when we are putting forward the infection control program, then we have to convince our manager that the implementation of IPC practice are cost effective. So this is what I call the pyramid of priority for action. So you can see very clearly that the high priority for implementation, not only which have got the high severity, high frequency, but the cost is quite low. And then you've got intermediate priority, in which you have got moderate severity, but the frequency intermediate, but cost is moderate. And of course, the low priority are mainly uneconomical. So this is the third stage of risk assessment of IPC measure. And this basically slide summarizes what we already discussed in the previous slide, that the bottom line is that whatever intervention we do, it must be cost-effective as well, based on the local evidence. Next slide. Now, this is the most important slide, I would think, because as a part of risk control, it is essential that we must think of the possible solution. These possible solutions can be divided into four. So you think of these four all the time. First of all, can you really avoid it altogether? So say, for example, do not reuse needle and syringes. If possible, that will actually eliminate all the blood-borne viral infection between patients. Can you minimize it? And for example, over here, that you can reduce risk by providing education and training in, say, for example, aseptic technique to minimize the risk. Can you transfer it? And the transfer of risk to third party are quite important. That means, can you, if you do not have enough facility available in your sterile service department or waste management, can you outsource somewhere which can provide you quality service? And I think, last one, can you really accept it? Maybe it could be short term, maybe it could be long term, because you do not have resources and the cost of intervention is actually phenomenal. So when you are doing risk control, these are the four criteria you should keep always in mind. Next slide. Now, once the control measures are implemented, it is very essential that we must actually put some criteria to monitor this. And this can be carried out by performance audit and or surveillance or combination of both to ensure that the action which are implemented, the adverse event and the HCI and whatever parameter you're measuring, must actually show some kind of reduction. The most important part, that the feedback information must be provided to all the stakeholders and the senior management, and plan can be revised and further improvement can be made, and this cycle can be repeated again and again and again till you bring your infection or adverse events to absolute minimal, or at least to the acceptable level based on your resources you have. Next slide. Now, this is the risk assessment in IPC, mainly basically on three factors. This slide actually shows you the characteristic of microorganism. For example, microorganism group 1 are unlikely to cause human disease, so I think you should not worry about those ones. However, if you go scale down to 2, 3, and 4, in group 4, the microorganisms which are responsible for causing disease, which can spread in the community, for which there is no effective treatment or prophylaxis available. So I think when you are looking at the risk assessment, you are looking at the organism and you are looking at the severity, and each organism, whether they are bacteria, viruses, or spores, they behave in a very different way. So you can see the group 4 organism will have very high priority compared to group 2 organism versus 3. Next slide. So besides the characteristic of microorganism, the other factors which are crucial are the severity of infection, which can range from simple colonization to mild infection to severe infection leading to death. And over here, I'm not going to go through this slide, but I just want to give you some of the example around here. The two MRSA patients are not identical. The patient with MRSA who has severe eczema can may act as a disperser, while the person with MRSA who has just colonized only in the nose but not on the side is much lower risk. And I have highlighted a couple of other examples in terms of patients who are open TB versus closed TB, patients with diarrheal diseases, etc. And the last and the most important one is the host susceptibility, which can actually happen because of two factors. Either the healthcare worker or the patient or the community have lifelong immunity. As I've told you, all infections do not give you lifelong immunity. Say, for example, chickenpox will give you lifelong immunity, but influenza and norovirus will not. And the second thing is that, did the healthcare worker or the patient have got any infectious diseases which are vaccine preventable? And once we have that information, so that means patient is immune and patient not susceptible based on that information. The second bit, which is very important, which is patient related, is the susceptibility of disease to the patient. So it could be the patient is on chemotherapy, patient who's on bone marrow transplant, patient who have got HIV, AIDS infection, etc. So those are the three factors you should take into consideration: microorganism, severity of infection, host susceptibility. Next slide, please. So I think what I'm going to do now, in the next 5 minutes, and the last part of the presentation, is to give you, spend some time to help IPC how we set priorities. Next slide. Now this is what we call 80-20 rules or Pareto principle, and I'm sure some of you or most of you are familiar with that. Just want to give you a little bit of background that Alfred Pareto was a 19th century economist who discovered that 80-20 rule while studying the distribution of wealth in Italy. He found that 80% of the wealth in Italy was held by only 20% of the people. Pareto principle can be applied to IPC in setting priorities, as it has been estimated that 80% of adverse outcome are often the result of only 20% of the causes. Pareto analysis is a simple technique for prioritizing potential cause by identifying problem. In limited resource setting, it can be argued that by shifting IPC focus and effort on most frequently occurring serious infection or adverse event can result in protection reduction of up to 80% of HCAI, etc. Next slide. So this is an example of the Pareto chart. So you can see from here that our main target and priority area will be in this particular hospital will be the controlling of BSI and surgical site infection will be priority. And once you start working through this Pareto chart, you find the whole SDI will shift gradually. So you can see 80% will cover your BSI and surgical infection. You may want to stop at bloodstream infection depending on the resources. But Pareto chart will be quite helpful to actually set priorities in these settings. And this could be different for different hospital. Next slide. So the question you'll be asking me, how do we develop Pareto chart? Pareto charts are quite simple, and they can be generated by using a spreadsheet program. And these are the program which are available, software which are available at the moment. And if you want to know how to create a Pareto chart using an Excel sheet, these are the two website addresses which you can go and which will teach you how to do Pareto chart. Next slide. Now, this bit is very important because as a part of priority setting, it is essential that IPC must learn how to manage their time properly. Because one of the things that, you know, sometimes we are just day-to-day, we are just lost in activity and we don't think, which is very important. Now, I think looking at this particular slide, on one side you can see the issues which are urgent, on the other side issues which are urgent but important and not important. Now, you can see that your first reaction will be that we should be dealing with the issues which are urgent and important. The answer to that question will be no. Because those are all reactive, and we have been into this crisis management to manage outbreak. So what actually happened that the first most important quadrant on this one will be number one. That means every IPC must pencil in some time to look at the most important issue, but which are not urgent, to focus on the strategic value to avoid problems and outbreak, which is quadrant two. And I think most of the time we don't do that. So that means taking time out, think strategically, think prevention, be proactive to avoid quadrant two, which is reactive. It is managing outbreak, it's crisis management. And at every effort, you must avoid three and four. And these are what we call the time waster and time robber. So these are the very important thing. And one thing I can give you example over here is email, which comes as a time waster. So I think you have to work out some kind of plan when you are going to manage your email. I think we now live in this age of internet. So I think there is a huge amount of time we waste in actually doing things which are not so important. So this will give you some kind of information, especially in low resource and also in high resource setting, where the IPC resources are very limited. So in conclusion, it is essential that IPC must actually carry out this assessment and identify unsafe, unnecessary, ineffective infection to practice, which are not really based on evidence, but they are just ritualistic and people have been doing it for a very long period of time, just for no good reason. Please be proactive rather than reactive. That means concentrate on quadrant one, which are important but not urgent, to prevent outbreak, which are important and which are also urgent as well. Take time out from your diary to think, so you can be the leader in the organization to provide a strategic direction to your organization and be proactive for prevention. Look at your surveillance data, information from audit and adverse infection, and act on it. Just don't sit on it. Act on it. Analyze information, identify key issue, prioritize using 80-20 principle, and make a business case or whatever case in order to get the resources. Draw up a plan and provide a solution based on the local need and local circumstances and local resources. Implement simple and effective solution which are achievable, affordable, and which are cost-effective. Next slide. So thank you very much. I now hand over to our chair, Shaheen, for the concluding remarks. And thank you very much for listening and for your time.
Thank you very, very much, Nizam, for a very insightful and deep thought into how to handle risk assessment and do risk analysis. I think it's quite important from our point of view, particularly for those who work in low to middle income countries, because they're overwhelmed with the amount of infection, the problems, the shortages, and the issues. So I think this is a very good way of putting it into perspective for us. Now it's just left for me and the pleasure to thank the audience for its presence and for attending this teleconference, and to the WHO for hosting these classes. If there are any questions, could you please forward them to info@webertraining.com. I think you'll find the website at the bottom of all your slides. And finally, from me, Nizam, I thank you very, very much for a wonderful talk, and the audience as well. Thank you so much. Goodbye.
Thank you. Bye.